Hi, Drew and Jonathan Scott here.
Reminding you that a lot of life's firsts are better with help from American Family Insurance.
Like your first home expansion.
Or your first big lightning strike.
There's a first for everything. Get the right home policy at the right price with the right help from American Family's agents.
Life's better when you're under American Family's roof. Insure carefully, dream fearlessly. Get a quote and find an agent at AmFam.com.
Products not available in every state. American Family Mutual Insurance Company, S.I. and its operating company, 6000 American Parkway, Madison, Wisconsin.
At what point do you classify yourself as an author versus a reviewer?
Art and artists can be separated, and in my mind, so can reviews and reviewers.
Please, please, Tutor Amble, read the book. And I'm like, I don't have enough time. I'm sorry.
Thanks for inviting me. Bye.
You know, the thing I caught from that video?
He's a prince! He's a prince! Welcome back to the Tutor Ramble episode. I'm one of your hosts, Austin.
I'm your other host, Richard.
And it's like I've never done an intro before. I was like speed demoning that intro.
I know.
Intro.
I was
like,
trying to mirror you a little bit because I was like,
trying
to
go super quick.
You know, I thought you were going for something, but it's fine.
I failed.
I was a follower.
Yep. Now, here's the question we have. We're positing this to all you viewers out there. Think about this question. Think deeply because we're going to talk about the whole episode. Should authors and reviewers be friends? Should they be friends? Big question. And I think we have a lot to say on this topic as being reviewers who are friends with authors at this point.
Oh, yeah.
Many authors. And friendly with other reviewers and authors. How has our whole perspective on this, you think, changed from little us before we had a BookTube review channel to episode one to episode like 200, whatever now?
Oh, I mean, it's a night and day difference of when we started something 3 years ago. We knew no authors. We knew very few reviewers. And yeah, I think maybe that could be the point of there's no question of authenticity in the sense of, hey, they're not friends with any of them. Why would their opinion ever be clouded?
These guys are losers.
Yeah, they're losers.
Of course I trust them. They have no shame.
However, and that now that we are friendly and friends with now several authors, it does bring into question of, hey, has their opinion been compromised? Long story short, we value our integrity. And so that's what we value on this channel quite a bit highly than not value it above our friendships. That sounds wrong, but I have trust in the friendships that they can handle my honest opinions, if that makes sense.
That's perfect sense, yeah.
And if it can't handle that, then all well, mm-hmm. I guess must not a great friendship to begin with. So,
and we'll give all of our thoughts throughout this video, but we have five different authors/authors and reviewers who submitted videos that we'll react to, including one from Christopher Horacchio, who we are friendly with. We can't say we're like the closest. No, we're friendly with Christopher Horacchio.
We had dinner and we chat a couple times.
If we have another dinner, we can call ourselves friends.
Yes.
You know, so
we're getting there.
Oh, we're pushing.
Okay. We're pushing that relationship as far as he's willing to let it go.
And so we have five different submissions and from all these different authors who give their thoughts because Rich and I asked them this question. Hey, should authors and reviewers be friends? And Rich and I will react to those videos. We will show you those videos. But first, to give credit to Paige from our Patreon, who submitted this idea in the first place as one of her hot takes. She was saying, hey, authors and viewers shouldn't be friends, and submitted that in our hot takes video we did.
You can check out that video down below. It's somewhere there.
Yes.
And if that's doing the YouTube thing.
And if you'd like to be one of those patrons, we have our Discord Patreon where we have a book club every month where Rich and I do book stuff with y'all. And there's community book clubs all the time. And you get to submit stuff like this, which can turn into videos. So thank you, Paige. Thank you, all our patrons. And so this, I kind of want to just start by going through the videos. Want to start with the one and only talking story.
The three and only
talking story.
This is definitely a good place to start in the sense of, I would consider us very good friends, and yes. They are authors. We reviewed their book and we both gave it a 5 stars.
Yes.
So
floored us.
Big. That's a big review. We don't give many 5 stars out there, I don't think. And so giving it to our friends, I would imagine I can see someone going like, are they boosting their score a little bit because mm-hmm. they're friends or what's going on? So this is a good place to start.
Especially because they have a BookTube channel talking story where they review books and now are authors.
Yeah. So they're in the exact same position as us as well.
So here they are. It's John, Jacob, and Amy from Talking Story.
While we're all here, Austin and Richard have sent us a toughie. We have to put our writer's hat on to answer this question.
Okay.
So here we go. Should authors and reviewers be friends? Basically, does it hurt or help the reviewer's credibility? Does it hurt or help author's craft and process?
I feel
who wants to go first?
I feel like this is directly addressed to us.
Yeah, I feel like they've singled us out.
I feel like we're being called out.
I really feel that.
I feel like it kind of depends. I mean, in the case of Austin and Richard, they kind of have a credibility of being very honest. And I think if it's in the case of a reviewer that is very honest.
Now, is he saying that because we're friends?
There you go.
It's a friend orgy. That's not the right word. What was I looking for?
You want to go cycle.
Cycle.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's a cyclical loop.
Yeah. Yeah. Woo. Okay. It's getting hot here. Okay.
It's kind of a fine relationship. There's not really anything wrong with that. It may help an author to know a bunch of reviewers, especially if you're indie, because then you can get your stuff out to more people that might be willing to review it and give you some thoughts. So, I mean, it helps the author, whether they do or don't like it, then you get notes on why they don't like it. So...
Right.
Yeah.
Historically speaking,
first point I want to talk about Jacob, then we'll go to what the Amy and John are saying.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I think that's the most obvious point, or at least the easiest one to get out of the way, is for authors. Yeah. It's definitely beneficial to be friends with reviewers. That's how your book, how the word of your book gets out.
Yes.
So, especially nowadays, for indie authors, especially. But even for trad authors as well. Best example that comes off the top of my head is Rocchio. Rocchio is a traditionally published author, and his connection with Mike's Book Reviews really blew up his book. Though I will say I think the review came first before the friendship.
Yeah.
But point still stands.
Yeah, and with you're exactly right. I want to be an author, so I'm writing, but after publishing a book... Exactly what Jacob's saying is the positive. Oh, they like it, spreads the word. Oh, they don't like it. If you're an honest author and want to increase your craft and you think they have something genuine to say, but also you could believe in the adage, all press is good press. So even if they hate it and are being mean to you, well.
Oh, there's definitely people that watch our stuff that go, oh, Richard didn't like the book. I'll probably like it.
That too.
Yeah. And vice versa.
All press is good press, yeah. Now, I think Amy's got her point on this.
Reviewers and authors, or like reviewers and performers, kind of always friends? I mean, you're just kind of like hanging out in the same spots.
It is
you're
the same kind of community.
Hanging out in the same cafes. Mm-hmm. And even though the relationship might be antagonistic sometimes, or
definitely,
or sometimes not, you know, especially if the reviewers are always, you know, like super honest and the authors can. And performers can take it, you know,
yeah.
If they've got a thick skin. I don't see why not. I mean, I just think historically speaking, they've always kind of hung out in the same spots, you know?
I think historically speaking, like there was that time when reviewers were like that beacon, that lighthouse that would try to be removed from everyone, and they would shine the light on what's worthy and then turn away and cast in darkness the work that they felt was, you know, not worthy of people's attention.
It's really poetic.
So I kind of think, but on this community, I think we're all pulling on the same team. I think we're all fans first and foremost. I think that's why we all have come to BookTube. So we all want the stories to be great. We want to have a dialogue. We want to have that critic dialogue that's important to the process of art and creating art. That stretches people and makes them think about different things or pushes them in their craft in ways. And I think it's just a friendlier environment here on BookTube.
I just want to pause on that exact point because John is such a genuine guy, one of the nicest guys on BookTube, just nicest guy ever. I love his optimism, and I have an optimistic spirit. I think he might even beat
me.
Oh
no, he's more optimistic than you.
He might even beat me on that.
Oh yeah,
because
not even close.
And he's even focusing on how the BookTube community here, and it's such a niche and it's such a friendly environment that you know people are coming from the right place. You get to know people here, mm-hmm. and I always like to use the example about the movie sphere and movie space, because that. I feel disconnected from film critics, and I'm a cinephile. I get geeky over films. I will get pretentious over films, but you ever look up reviews on Rotten Tomatoes and go, okay, that movie shit. How the hell is that Oscar nominated, Emilia Perez? How the hell did like this group of people who are apparently reviewers and trying to be objective, elevating this horrible, whatever it might be, film, TV show, and which people generally go, no, that's not for audiences. There's no way that made it that far, honestly.
Yeah.
I agree with John completely on like the BookTube space can be like this, but you know, because it's books and it's such a small community here, but the further you get into popularity, do you start to feel that push and pull? Like, what do you think is the issue there with like, just take off books for a second? Do you think that movies have a different issue than we do?
Sure. I think larger industries have a different problem. I'll bring up a specific issue with something like IMDb when it comes to games. I'll give that example. So IMDb is kind of famous for giving everything basically minimum a 7 out of 10.
Everything's a 7.
I think a handful of times they go below a 7 is something like the Gollum game.
If you see a 6, you know it's bad.
Oh, yeah. IMDb is wrong. IGN, sorry.
I knew what you were talking about, yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, yeah.
If IGN gives something a 6, oh, it's hot garbage. But they give everything a 7. Why? IGN gets access to early copies of video games, and they are very much closely tied to the video game industry. And so for them to give scathing reviews of something and it's not just a, you know, author writes one series and then moves on, and it's a large company that makes a lot of games. If a IGN gives a scathing review of their game, why would that company, say Ubisoft, give IGN early access to future games? So
they want positive press.
Exactly. They want positive. There could be a disincentive there. So there could be some adverse incentives in that relationship. But then there's also the nature of just how these games work. Are video game journalists even fully playing the game? Are they good at games? There's a bunch of like funny stories with like Cuphead of video game journalists were giving it poor reviews, and it was like, yeah, because they couldn't get past the first level because they're just bad. They're bad at video games. Anyway, that's just something interesting. But with books, there's not like a multi-conglomerate that is controlling access to early copies. If you give a bad review to something, okay, maybe that author won't give you an arc next time, but you can get an arc for a bunch of other books. So it's not going to, you're not going to lose your access to early copies.
Well, your persona and how you review, people know, okay, this channel reviews this way. When mm-hmm. you look at Tudor Ramble, I believe we give the perception we attempt to, and always consciously be as honest as we possibly can. Of course, who knows? Like, hey, maybe being friends unconsciously, there's the bias there. We both agree with that. But in the sphere, are we looked at like, hey, we're a bit more critical. 5 stars are harder for us. And the reason I say this is because Jacob, who we're close friends with, was so nervous to get us to read this book.
Yeah.
He told us how nervous he was because we tend to be more critical on this channel, or like dive deep into the books and can be harder to please, which is totally fair. But Jacob, our close friend, was like, oh God, don't turn my heart out. And I can only imagine, is that a tough thing for you to do of, obviously, you want credibility and honesty, but at the same time, do other authors know, like, oh, Rich and Austin, like, they're the ones that could give a bad review to this. I might not want to even start the relationship or throw a book out their way. I mean, we wouldn't know if that's happening, but is that a possibility?
I mean, sure, it's a possibility, but
because how much just being positive helps. Because you know the movie channels too, where some movie channels are just all positive.
Yeah.
Some are all negative.
Yeah.
Some are like, hey, push into the hate. Like, look at the show that's dumb. Let's make fun of it.
Oh, no. There are definitely channels out, like, and things. I fail to really find that same energy on BookTube. I don't see it the same way.
Oh, yeah.
Where with movies and TV shows, like, I know channels that are like, they are positive about every single thing that comes out. And that's all that, like, you start going, really?
Chris Stuckman is a movie reviewer who only reviews books that, or sorry, only reviews movies he likes. Is that correct?
Yeah. But then there's also plenty of people like, I remember a channel called Emergency Awesome, I think. I stopped watching his stuff a while ago, but very, very positive to the point of like going, come on, man. Really? It's a little bit much. I mean, hey, he finds joy in trash. Like, that's all the better for him. But then there's
Is that us projecting? Maybe.
But then there's plenty of others of, I would say, probably Nerdrotic and Critical Drinker, which I may agree with many times, but I would say their channels overall get their views based on negativity. That's the audience.
Then you get the Drinker Recommends.
That is true. When the Drinker gives a recommendation, it comes across like he likes something.
When you see two Ramble with a thumbnail, like with they're smiling.
Yeah, exactly.
And to John's point, we could finish up the clip here. He is. I didn't mean to rampage off of his point of the book community. It's positive, and the friends here. We're in a smaller niche, so I think it's way less magnified. Yeah. Than in the movie sphere, but I just wanted to address that. Okay. I'm so sorry for cutting you off, John.
Because we all seem to be on that same side and not as removed.
That's really an important point about being fans together of the artwork. And I think as long as you're like, you kind of like hold that above what you're doing, kind of like a triangle trifecta of the critic, artist, and the fandom of the story.
Yeah,
I think it can work.
Or the fandom of story in general, and we all want it to be as good as it can be, so right. We can all revel in it and share it and talk about how it impacts us.
So there.
I suppose the alternative is to just put up a barrier as an author and be like, hey, cool to review my book, but if you want to hang out, get away from me.
I thought you were going to shoot the finger.
Yeah. So there you go. I guess those are our thoughts. Thanks so much for sending a toughie our way, Austin and Richard.
Of course.
Is that what they call them, a toughie?
I don't know. That's what I called it.
Okay.
I don't think anyone calls it that.
That is a very funny. Also, that point they made at the end there, any thoughts on that?
Yeah. I mean, the idea of the trifecta of, you know, the artist, the reviewer, and the fan, like, yeah. As long as they share too, then it's a generally positive relationship and can be seen with a genuine level of authenticity. Mm-hmm. That's probably true. But a lot of this is you take a look at their history and see, like, the proof is in the pudding often. Are they willing to give a negative review to someone that they know? And if you've seen examples of that, it's like, oh, well, then a good shot, willing to be critical about something. Same thing on positive reviews. They're not just, I know it kind of almost always goes this way, is people think, oh, people are giving positive reviews to something. But I think the opposite is also true. Are they lowering their score because they just don't like someone personally?
Mm-hmm.
Though that's, I think, less relevant in the book space. Like, I don't think we have any like
vendettas,
enemies, you know?
We'll make one.
We should make one.
We will make one.
We do need
one. Know, pick one. What's a booktuber? They're go ahead. We got to punch up though.
I mean, for a while there, I think Bookborn was our enemy.
We had a complete change in our arc though, because
we did.
Well, Bookborn's like our big sister in a way.
You respect your enemy. I respected Bookborn, yep. And we had to change our entire rating system, mm-hmm. because she torched ours. She torched it.
Big sis knows.
Big sis knows. No,
we were humbled.
We were humbled. We need a new enemy.
Okay, we'll pick one. We'll find one out. Maybe we'll figure these next submissions.
Yeah, comment down below. Who do you think should be our BookTube nemesis? Who should we go after with a, you know, pitchfork?
A diamond fist. Iron's not enough.
Yes. Mm.
And I want to mention to their point at the end there, which was the trifecta. Mm-hmm. And that reminds me just of, in, I guess when you're looking for a reviewer, obviously you could see our past, whether you trust us or not with your views. If you're watching this much, you either like really hate watch us, or you're like, oh, they do funny jokes sometimes, or, oh, I kind of like seeing Rich's opinions on this, or Austin's opinions on that, whatever it might be. But I think time is a great factor to know the motives or the passion behind a reviewer you're looking at. Because the two things that's a problem is when you're looking at somebody's review and you think they're either compromised by one because they want to be in the club, like the critics in the movies, like want to be in the club, want to be sent movies and want to be a part of things. But two, they're doing it for just views or whatever that might be. Mm-hmm. And I think a good way to tell, like, hey, how much do they love stories or what's the thing? It's, let's say one of those movie critics has like a thing where they do daily reviews on stories, like 9 to 5. That's their whole thing. And they just obsess and they interview people over stories. Like I know there's some, I can't remember his name, the movie interviewer, but he asked the most perfect questions where it's the most passionate. I'm going to find him so I can send this to Nick so he could put it in post. But he's one of the best interviewers I've ever seen. It's kind of like, you know, Hot Ones.
Yeah.
He's really good at that interviews, and he looks into you can tell he's like into his job. But you get to see somebody like, oh, they're obsessed over stories. Mm-hmm. And the more you kind of see that, the more bellwether of like, okay, they like this way too much. They're like, they might. And I think that's why when you look in the BookTube sphere, 90% of people, 80% of people, 59. I think when you look there and you see, okay, why are these people, why are they doing books? Why are they posting videos on this? And just kind of look at their entourage of what they do. If they post Aquatar stuff where they're in gym shorts and they just generally, they have booty shorts in the gym, they're not serious people and you should not take them seriously. That's just my message, essentially.
That is very fair.
Do you agree with all that? Was that even a sensible
rap? Men in booty shorts in the gym generally should not be taken seriously.
And who does a review in wigs and gowns for 3 hours?
Yeah, those seem like people that are just looking for clout and don't actually have any authenticity. That's what it says to me.
So just listen to your eyes, is all I'm saying. Okay, we have five total, like I said, five total submissions from authors. That first one was talking story. This next one here is Philip Chase. Philip Chase has his own BookTube channel. He actually makes an introduction in his video. I'll let him introduce himself. But we are friendly with Philip. He's a great guy. I love Philip.
Philip's great.
Yeah, he's my best friend.
He's a smart guy.
Yeah.
He's one smart cookie.
He's very intelligent.
He is also just way more eloquent when talking about prose and the writing process.
Yes. What was that video we did with him? Remember? I know the title is trying to segue.
What makes, you know, what makes masterful prose or something like that.
We collab with him on our channel. Okay, here's Philip. Let's go.
Hello, Austin and Richard. Thank you for inviting me to give my 2 cents on the question of whether authors and reviewers should be friends. For those who don't know me, my name is Philip Chase. I have a YouTube channel dedicated to exploring fantasy literature, and I'm also the author of the Adan trilogy. So I am both a reviewer and an author, which actually I think maybe gets to the heart of the matter. The fact is, the question may be flawed in that many authors are reviewers and many reviewers are also authors. Many of us wear both hats, in fact, and that has almost always been the case, going way back to the time of Shakespeare when another author, Ben Jonson, wrote about Shakespeare's works. Or you have famous examples like Matthew Arnold or Oscar Wilde. These are revered critics, but also authors. So the fact is, the two realms are really not that separate. There's no clean border between reviewing and writing. They stem from the same passions, the same dedication to the craft of writing. And that is why it is actually beneficial for many authors to put on their critic hats and for many critics to try their hand at being an author. I think it's actually a wonderful thing that authors and reviewers share the same spaces and trade ideas and learn from each other. Now, that said, there are some, I think, good rules to follow. If you are an author and you have friends who review your book, you have to actually step back and give them that space. And anyone who thinks that a reviewer, let's say on YouTube, is going to just be super nice to a book because it happens to be written by their friend doesn't really understand the importance of credibility to most people who do reviews on YouTube or elsewhere. The fact of the matter is, most reviewers are going to feel that they're obligated to give their true feelings about their experience with a given book, no matter who the author is. And it is very important for an author to respect that, to say, oh, this person is my friend, but now they're putting on their reviewer hat, and I need to allow them to have their say. And also have the integrity to remain friends with that person, even if that person does not particularly enjoy the book. Because the fact of the matter is, no book is going to please everyone. And you can still be friends with someone, even if they don't love your book.
Well said, Philip. Oh, well, yeah. Seth, what do you think about his thoughts there?
Well, especially coming from the author point of view on how authors should look at it and being able to stay friends with reviewers, even if that reviewer may not like your book.
Yeah.
It is definitely important. I mean, every artist to some degree has to have some thick skin. And generally, if you're a creative of any kind, you have to be willing to take criticism and take it on the chin. And it often comes from, do you know their intentions? Do they, you know, are they wishing you the best and offering you criticism out of care, or are they doing it just to knock you down? You have to be aware of that. But yeah, no, friends should give criticism to their friends.
We've talked about this in the past too. How different does it make it when you're giving criticism to your friend off camera versus on camera? Because that's the next element in this. It's not just a review, it's a public review.
Yeah, so
difference from like feedback versus a review, you know?
Yeah, we've done this a little bit on overall with most of our reviews. We zero in on the book itself, and we talk about the details of the book, not necessarily the author. We try to stay away from trying to project our opinions of what the author was feeling, just, hey, here's the book. What was the book trying to do? There are exceptions. So
what comes to mind?
I mean, Patrick Rothfuss off the top of our head.
Yeah.
To some degree, maybe we were doing it a little bit with Brandon Sanderson's Wind and Truth, though I don't think so. Not really. I think we were mostly on the book.
I respect the guy, though.
I respect the hell out of him, but we were probably projecting a little bit of asking like why things have changed in our opinion.
Yeah.
But that would be something of I would not want to, if I'm, you know, friends with an author, I would not want to compromise and kind of air out the personal relationship in a public setting. Like fully honest about the book and review, but I would try not to project opinions about the individual and basically use a personal relationship to get even finer details about the book. I think that would be the line. Examples with our friend that we gave a one star for his book that he wrote.
Yes. This is not publicly.
It's not published.
We didn't review it online. Yeah.
It was just our friend sent us a book to review. We gave it a one star. Like bad book. We asked some questions of going, hey, because we know you personally, why did you write this character this way? And we were psychoanalyzing him a little bit and trying to get to the root of some of his character writing issues. I would not talk about that kind of personal relationship on a review. Mm-hmm. It would not be relevant. And
it doesn't help the viewer.
It doesn't help the viewer. Yeah. No, at all. And
theoretically, giving all that feedback,
it's a betrayal to a friend to air out that personal relationship in front of the public.
Definitely. Yeah, giving that feedback to him is helpful. We know our friend. We know how he could take the criticism. Like, okay, let's cut through all the niceties. And here's what we think. Let's help you out. if it was public, would just be bullying.
Yeah.
Look how much your friend sucks. He's so bad. But that is a big difference. And I guess when we're reviewing something here and punching up to a Patrick Rothfuss book, The Name of the Wind, again, we're going to be a little... People will generally be different for an indie author they know than a big author they don't know. Your tone can be different. Your tone, hey, I equally didn't like The Name of the Wind. Like, I gave a 1.5 star to The Name of the Wind. Bad book. I think a bad book. But also, one of the our next submissions here, which not Christopher Rocchio's yet. We'll get to Christopher Rocchio's. But Adrian Gibson, who wrote Mushroom Blues, we had a review on our channel about his book. It's a noir mushroom book. It's very unique. You got Rich, you like the book.
Yeah, I was fairly middling on it. I thought it was at like below average in some categories, above average in others. For it, there are certain people I would recommend the book to.
You did like the book.
Yeah.
Yeah. So yeah, Adrian Gibson, we had him on where we did an entire review with the indie author Adrian Gibson. Rich and I, as we went through our categories, you can look up a review on this. The reason we also did it is because since Rich liked it and I didn't like it, it's not just us sitting here both not liking the book,
yeah,
and attacking Adrian, which of course it wasn't an attack either. Just because I'm friendly with Adrian, that review is the tone is different than a Name of the Wind review, which I think they're both like in the same sphere of I don't like the books. Mm-hmm. However, it's friendly with Adrian. Here's why I don't like the book. Ha ha. Adrian, like making jokes too, versus you don't have to pull, you can be more different with your tone, and you also know The Name of the Wind is a book that a lot more people have read too. Whereas Mushroom Blues, you know, people are going to get the book or not based on your thoughts. And it also helps because my negative review on a book could be why somebody gets the book.
Yeah, so true.
And these are Adrian's thoughts, and he'll introduce himself here. But Adrian, thank you for submitting. Here we go.
What is up, everybody? My name is Adrian M. Gibson, author of Mushroom Blues, which is Austin's favorite book of the year, clearly, if you've watched any of our past videos together. But just on this question of should authors and reviewers be friends? Friendship is obviously a relative term. What is an acquaintance versus a longtime friend? Or how do online friends compare with in-person friends? But at the very least, it benefits both authors and reviewers to be friendly with one another. After all, they sustain each other in various ways. Without authors, where would the books be that reviewers read? Where would they come from? Without reviewers, authors would lose out on so many different forms of promotion and the interest that's garnered from that reviewer's audience. And there are plenty more mutual benefits as well. But when that more surface level professional connection deepens into something more akin to friendship, there are also opportunities for more creative collaborations. If you've seen me on this channel, you know that Austin, Richard, and I did a review of Mushroom Blues with me. That was just one example of something that developed as a result of my relationship with Rich and Austin and the ability for us to be critical and good humored together, despite the fact that they are reviewing my book in front of my face. But on top of that, reviewers are often more than just reviewers. They're content creators, they're bloggers, they're podcasters, and they can offer authors help when it matters most. So interviews, cover reveals, all kinds of forms of coverage and collaboration become possible when the friendship develops between both parties, giving authors a leg up in terms of promoting their books and getting their books in front of more people's eyes, essentially. On the flip side, reviewers and content creators can get deeper insights into the books that they love. They can talk to the authors about them, have in-depth conversations through things like interviews, which are really, really awesome and a lot of fun for both parties to partake in. And then those insights can be passed on to the audience, the readers, the people who are consuming these books and helping to support the author's careers, helping to support them financially. That gives them a more in-depth connection with the books that they read and the people that have created them as well. After all, when it comes down to it, friendships are mutually beneficial, and the same can apply here on a professional and a personal level. So that kind of connection can really be a cool opportunity to directly help the authors that these reviewers admire. And in reality, even if a reviewer doesn't love an author's books, I'm looking at you, Austin, at least they can admire them as people and as friends. And I think that's a really important thing. You know, speaking of which, as an author personally, I welcome criticism on my book. You know, if you've watched that Mushroom Blues review that we did here on Tutor Ramble, but I especially welcome criticism when it comes from trusted voices. So getting Austin's opinions on this, getting Rich's opinions on this was a very fruitful discussion and a very beneficial experience for me. Maybe not all authors feel that way, but that's just me personally. And hopefully in these cases, the reviewer, such as Austin, shouldn't feel bad if the book didn't click with them. Because not every book is going to click with every single person. And I don't take that personally. Some authors might. That's a matter of their perception of reviews and how they handle criticism on their own. But for me, I welcome that kind of thing. Plus, there are nuggets of truth and wisdom in every critique, and I'm happy to receive that. So from my perspective, hell yes, authors and reviewers can become friends. In the end, we're part of a community bound by our love of books, and it benefits us all to be friendly with one another on a human level. Art and artists can be separated, and in my mind, so can reviews and reviewers. So if two people click, then nothing should prevent them from becoming friends.
Oh, I like that. Enlai, he's made a statement on the separating art versus the artist and saying you could separate the reviewer from the review in a way.
But
wow.
I think that does go both ways, is there are people that just can't separate an art from the artist.
Yeah.
And I think the same way. Mm. And so I think both are valid and need to be judged on a case-by-case basis. And you kind of have to just check both an author and reviewer's credibility.
For sure. For sure. Adrian made a lot of good points in that section there. I think his best point was just how, you know, we're valid reviewers. And he said, like, yes. Austin, don't feel guilty. That was the best point he made. That was a great point. Adrian, great point. But with what Adrian was saying here is the thing that helps as well is, hey, we knew Adrian enough to know that, again, why the same score for Mushroom Blues and Name of the Wind's different is because we know Adrian, and there's a tactful, and I don't like to say the word tactful because it's not like a strategy of let me think of how to say my words.
It's just
there's a respectful way to talk about a book and be friends with somebody. Where if I knew Patrick Ruffus personally and like we were drinking buddies, like I'd probably talk about him and like, this is bad, I disagree, and I'm gonna like punch him when I see him at the bar next week. Like I'd have a more playful tone with it because.
Why is life better with American Family Insurance? Because every policy comes with something very special. A trusted agent who's there to help protect your dreams by finding the right coverage at the right price. Save up to 23% when you bundle home and auto. American Family Insurance. Get a quote and find an agent at AmFam.com.
Products not available in every state. Visit AmFam.com to learn how discounts may apply to you. American Family Mutual Insurance Company, S.I. and its operating company, 6000 American Parkway, Madison, Wisconsin.
Hey, that's my buddy book. That it.
You can give the same opinion two different ways, and you still have your integrity is the same, but yeah, your friendship could change your tone and how you deliver that message. That's certainly true.
Yes. Yeah. And with all the things he said there, what do you think was the most interesting part? What do you want to focus in on?
I think it's very obvious on the author. We've talked about already now with the benefits the author gets being friends with reviewers.
Yeah.
But there is the benefit that reviewers get from being friends with authors. Mm-hmm. For the most part, there is a lot of insight that reviewers can bring to an audience and bring to the consumers by being friends with an author. Because a lot of readers want to read interviews and deeper insight into their favorite books. Well, that comes through a reviewer's relationship in the industry.
Yeah.
And if you're trying to network to different people, get to know people in the space, you're bound to be friends with people. And so that's just part of the business.
Yeah.
And
talking stories point on that, like, hey, we're all right here.
Yeah. So if you as a, you know, audience member watching, listening, and you like hearing interviews and you like hearing like breakdowns from authors and hearing that kind of deeper insight into some of the favorite books that you love, that can only come from reviewers going out of their way to make connections to authors, which inevitably is sometimes going to lead to friendships. And so you do have to just weigh those scales. What do you value? What do you want? Do you want the completely isolated reviewer where, you know, they're friends with nobody, but ultimately they don't have reviews, they don't have interviews, they don't have any deeper insights from the authors because they're not talking with them. So maybe that's the trade-off you're looking for as a as a reader.
We talked about this in our hot takes a little bit, where the most honest, unabridged review you can possibly get is if you have a friend that is super well read, that's read mm-hmm. thousands of books, and you go, hey, what'd you think about this book? You could disagree with your friend, but they're not in front of a camera. They have no other motive other than, hey, I want to give my friend a recommendation or not. You'll ask your friend and they'll go, this is what I think.
Yeah.
Every extra layer of that we've been talking about, of the camera, how big you are, the friend, that's where
it's all influence.
It's all
how much does that individual let themselves be influenced? But there is pressure mm-hmm. around. So it's
whether you're conscious of it or not. Yeah.
Exactly. And so you as an audience member just has to make a judgment call. It's really hard to gain credibility. It takes a lot of patience, a lot of time, and it's really easy to lose it all. All it takes is one really, really biased video to come out and you've lost your credibility and you're really not going to get it back.
I lose my credibility with my honest takes. Like me thinking Red Rising book one's a 5-star book when even Pierce Brown disagrees with me. I'm not doing it for the author. I'm not doing it for any of you maggots out there. It's peak literature, and I lose credibility for that.
Maybe.
No, naturally. Like, I understand that objectively speaking, maybe. You'd be like, oh, Austin, he's a stonehead. He doesn't understand what makes a good book. I'd say you're wrong, but, you know, that's just... So here's the thing, too, of looking at the credibility layers of somebody like us. We've been 200 something episodes in. Do you feel from the start to, like, I kind of referred to this before, but from episode 1 to episode 200 and whatever, have you changed the way that you review books as we've gotten bigger? Or is it specifically you think you've gotten better? Like, what are your thoughts in your head? Like, how has that helped? Just going, when we talk about books differently, so maybe it can come across like, okay, we can more hopefully intelligently say what we think about things.
I mean, that's the biggest change from between episode 1 and 200 and something.
Yeah.
I've read a lot more books.
Good.
So my opinions on the genre, I feel, are different and changed.
Do you feel more valid now? Do you feel more...
Yeah. I mean, the more you read in a particular genre, the more examples that you have to, like, hey, when is it done well? When is it not? If you don't have a lot of experience in said genre, it's hard to have a reference point. So the more you read, often, like, the more examples you can pull from on whether it's done well or not. I think that actually can go too far. If you've read too much into a genre, you become so jaded where you can't actually give a good, you'll be like, oh no, that book is awful.
Cliche. Yeah.
It's cliche when someone's reading going, for the first time going, what the hell are you talking about? This was great.
This is awesome. Fun.
And going, you do have to think about, I actually think about that so frequently of, hey, I know this didn't work for me because I've seen this over and over, but it's done really well. And for someone watching that hasn't read every book in this genre, they would love it. And I think that's important to remember.
Yeah.
But in regards to influence that we have from the people that we've met, I don't think so. I don't think it's particularly influenced me, but I do feel the pressure of it.
Gotcha. That makes sense. Adrian, thank you for submitting. And last question before we move on, we have two more videos to react to. Mm-hmm. Chris Ferracchio's Not Yet. We're still holding on to that thread.
We're doing the YouTube thing.
We'll also finish with all, these are all so far authors and reviewers. Christopher I'm sure he's talked about books, but he doesn't have a channel dedicated to reviewing. He's an author.
Yeah, he's an author first.
For all these three previous, we had Talking Story, Philip Chase, Adrian Gibson. Adrian Gibson also has a podcast, I believe SFF Addicts podcast. Do you think when all three of them now, at what point do you classify yourself as an author versus a reviewer? Because you changing your own label might change how you review things.
It's definitely... Again, bringing up Chris Stuckman again, it's really hard to change once you've started the path. I think going from reviewer to author, it's fairly easy to, like, while you're an author, you can still be a critic. but trying to be an author first and then becoming a critic.
Does that ever happen? Come on.
Critics are, you know, pond scum that live, you know, they're leeches on the actual creatives. Mm-hmm. And why would you ever go from artist to
exactly
critic?
Opposite to Adrian's point of like how it's symbiotic. You're saying, no, it's purely parasitic.
No, like critics are worse. They are the people that wish they were cool and creative, mm-hmm. and they're just not good enough.
So then when you become an author, it's, oh, I'm an author.
No, like author is better than critic.
Philip Chase.
There is a proper hierarchy and of value. Author is way more valuable than critic.
Philip Chase was talking about how having your different hats on, to put on your reviewer hat, author hat. We just have our author hat. Like, why would you, if you have to work two jobs and one of your job is like, oh, I'm an astrophysicist. And I also like bus tables. You're an astrophysicist.
Yeah.
You know,
for the, exactly. No, you put the label of the highest rank, you don't go down.
You're not walking around with flyers like, you know, I bust tables just because it's kind of fun. Like, that's a good side
thing. An author can occasionally dip their toes into the murky waters of being a critic, but they're never a critic. They critique things. They can put on their hat.
They go undercover boss. Like, you know, they go on the show and like, let me pretend to be a cashier for an episode.
Let me pretend to be Ponsco. That's that's what they get to do.
So all three so far have been purely authors. Sorry, have been both authors and reviewers. And I'm going to go more into a lesser known author. This is an indie author, Tanner, T.D. Orell, who wrote a book, Titan's Nest.
I like his book, by the way. You should read it, Titan's Nest. It's fun.
I'm gonna read it eventually. We will review it eventually and have him on. And it'll be glorious. We'll have another thing like with Adrian. And Tanner said he was a bit nervous. Again, that nerves come because so far with Adrian,
he should be nervous with you. I know your taste.
Oh shit!
it's classic. It's classic Dragon Rider fantasy with a twist. I don't know if it's enough twist for you. I don't know. I hope you like
it. He was saying, because Adrian's book, we're talking about the 1.5 star, Ryan Cahill's first book of Blood and Fire, or first in that series, Brown of the Broken, gave 1.5 stars as well. I'm on a horrible indie streak. But then Discovery by J.J. Mitten, 5 stars. I broke the indie streak.
Honestly, at this point, I'm just, like epic classic fantasy do you actually like?
Lord of the Rings?
Is there anything else?
Game of Thrones?
That's not classic fantasy.
What would you call?
Grimdark fantasy. Grimdark.
I mean, what other classics have we read that you would include?
I mean, there's Wheel of Time.
I don't like Wheel of Time.
Blood and Fire. I mean, It's classic.
Oh, you're talking about like the farm boys. You're talking about those types of tropes.
That genre.
Oh, like sword. Sword and like...
Sword,
there's
farm
a sword
boy,
and sorcery type stuff.
Yeah, there's the king and the...
Oh, okay.
That kind of genre.
Oh.
Because like, I don't know if you would like
Cat Williams. I haven't read a ton of that.
Yeah.
All the stuff that, like, we'll see. We'll see as they come back.
Hopefully.
But this is Tanner's thoughts on the topic of should authors and reviewers be friends? And let me just say, Tanner is someone I personally would not want to be friends with. And whatever he says in these next several seconds of the video, it's not true, just to warn people. It is not true. Except the part he says about Richie. What he says about you is 100% true.
Should authors and reviewers be friends? I'm not surprised at all that Austin and Richard are seeking my opinion on this topic, given the fact that I am an indie author and I am also Austin's closest friend. To be clear, Austin's probably not my closest friend, but from my understanding, I am Austin's closest friend. He texts me constantly. Not to mention my long romantic relationship with Richard, but we won't touch on that here. So should authors and reviewers be friends? From an indie perspective, I ask you this. Should a Knight's Radiant bond with a Spren? Absolutely.
Okay,
for indie authors like myself, unknown small indie authors, these friendships, these relationships are essential for survival. For example, a few years ago, Austin and Richard had posted they were looking for someone to edit their social content. To edit their videos. So I applied for that job. I edited some of their videos and I sent it to them with zero interest in being a video editor.
Zero interest. This is also true. So Nick, who's editing our videos, by the way, this was your competition. The reason we know Tanner is because he was one of like the 90 applicants or whatever it was that applied to be our editor. That's how we know Tanner.
Zero
interest. He had zero interest.
You gotta respect the hustle.
The hustle,
man,
was there. He's like, I will fucking do anything. I'll do fucking anything. All right.
Getting his foot in the door.
I actually kind of hate editing videos, but I knew that if I sent them my work, this could get my foot in the door. We could have a conversation. If we have a conversation, we might be able to set up a friendship. And if we have a friendship, they might be willing to read my work. And if they read my work, they might talk about it on the podcast. Okay. Yep. If you listen to their podcast, you've maybe heard Richard say 1,000 times, he loves Titan's Nest. Richard, I'm honored. So to be clear, I played you both like a fiddle. I think Austin saw through that. That's why he refuses to read Titan's Nest. But either way, I'm grateful. So yes, authors, especially in the indie space, need to establish a friendship with these reviewers. You guys have done an awesome job, though, of clarifying and being very upfront that whether you're friends with them or they're sitting right in front of you, you're willing to give them a 1.5 rating directly in front of the author. So I think your credibility, despite your friendship, will always stand. Nobody's questioning that, which I greatly admire. That's all I have to say. See you later.
Now, I've got to say, as much as Tanner's saying that, obviously, I want to ask you this, Rich, because how much of that do you feel when people reach out to you and you're a reviewer and it's an author who is pure indie, or they don't even have it's not traditionally published, but also it doesn't have a fan base. It's their first book. How many... Sorry, I said I was going to ask a question. Let me just preface this with a quick statement because I see all the emails where we get, I'd say dozens. A dozens is probably the accurate amount. Dozens per month. I would say maybe upwards like 30 per month of like, read this book. It's probably more. I would say one a day is like a good estimate.
Sure.
And our email is not like, you know, you could find it. It takes some effort to get to our email, but tutoramble@gmail.com. But we get lots
of... Don't do that. Don't make it easier.
You don't have to worry about it. It's fine.
That's
so
true.
So with all the requests we get to read these books, I just wanted to preface that. That's how much we get. The question to you, Rich, is how much do you feel that the reviewer is there and the authors want to get that relationship with the viewer when they don't have an audience?
How much is that factor? Oh, well, okay. This has definitely shifted from
has it shifted
when we started and now where we are.
Yeah.
And we're not even that big, but we're bigger than some. And like, and that you can definitely feel the vibe of like indie authors going like, please Tutor Amble, read the book. And I'm like, I don't have enough time. I'm sorry. Maybe.
I'm sorry, little one.
I'm sorry, little
that,
one.
You said it looking down, like you're echoing from the mountain.
Yeah. Compare this to really, really early on when Andrew Givler sent us his book. It was like, hey.
No, better example. Because Andrew Givler had like a million subscribers.
But that's the point.
Yeah. Oh, I see what you're saying.
He was in a different position where we were going, we are looking for people. We're looking for authors. We're looking for anybody to talk to because we were just so small. And then we picked up Soul Fraud by Andrew Givler. And that relationship started off because of definitely a different power imbalance.
Yeah, like where he had so many subscribers. He was the one reaching out to us. I thought you were going to go the example of Stephen Guglich, who wrote Piercing the Veil, who this
also
is
true.
The reason I bring that up is he was a debut author who shot us an email early on into our podcast time where right now I'm saying, hey, we probably get like 30 a month of requests. I don't know, anywhere for that range. Back then, we would get like 2 a year.
Well, that's also something with T.D. Oral, when he sent his book, Titan's Nest, to us, it was definitely at a time when we got less requests.
Exactly. And Stephen Guglich, we ended up, he reached out to us. We were like, oh my God, somebody reached out to us. We had the time to read his book, have a dedicated podcast episode. You could look way back where we talked with, look up Piercing the Veil, Tutor Amble. It's probably up there. Also, book was above average to good. It was like, it was well done.
Actually, I think, need to look into when the second book's coming out. It may already be out.
I don't think it's out yet. I think it's not still out yet? No, but however, the book was like for a debut author as well. Like I was impressed.
I think on it more positively as time goes on.
Yes. It definitely,
especially, is it a spoiler to say like the genre? That, like
he doesn't want people to know.
He doesn't want people to know.
I remember him saying that specifically, which I think you should, but that's his prerogative.
It's his prerogative. I do think it makes it for a more fun pitch.
I do as well.
Like if I were to pitch the book, it's an essential aspect I would say. But
yes.
Hey.
That aside. That's a case of like if that also went through a more, I don't want to say traditional publisher would have made it better, but obviously if he had editors or the like the resources to do what, I don't know, like a typical tour book does, mm-hmm. Like I think that could have been even better. You know what I mean? It was definitely a debut author, but still impressive. So anyways, I say that because he reached out to us and we had the time to read his book, have him on a podcast episode, dedicate all of our time because that was the email that we were sent by an author.
Yeah.
Whereas now today with schmucks like TD Orwell, who actually he reached out early enough on. But the reason you also read his book, though, it wasn't that early on. It was we knew him because he was in the editing application. And for any of you guys watching who are indie authors, want to get to know reviewers and all that. Obviously, you could see Tanner is just hilarious, fun. Like we got along with him great. He watches us enough, too. To know how to manipulate and understand our personalities like him. And he's just a little snaky, slimy snake he is.
I liked his personality enough that I think I was traveling and I was like, I'm going to listen to his book.
Exactly.
And so like, it was his personality that got me to read the book and I liked it.
Oh, absolutely. And it was to the point too, where he obviously got talking to us. And the reason he stood out more was because I looked at Tanner and, jokes aside, like really like Tanner. He's a great guy. And so Rich and I were trying to find jobs for him because we wanted to work with Tanner on things. We're like, wait, maybe we'll have a news segment in the episodes where Tanner will give like a minute. We're still thinking about getting Tanner involved. Okay.
We want him involved somehow, but we don't know how.
We want some control over his, like a percent of his time. We want like him in here, you know?
No, his personality needs to be
owned
in some fashion or another.
This must be parasitic. We must take something from him.
Of course. Yes.
Yeah. Anyways, the long way of saying that, that's the author to reviewer relationship. Yeah.
I'm gonna be nice here.
Oh, you're gonna pick it up?
Yeah.
I can get it for you if it's on this side.
It is.
Oh, you got it already. Nice. Which we will be reviewing on the channel eventually. I just still have to read it. And he's been messaging me quite a bit about it. I will get to it.
I'm shilling for him just so that it's in view. People can actually see the book.
Yes.
There we go, Tanner. You can Venmo me the 25 later.
He's duped us again. Ugh, damn it. It's working. But yes. So Tanner brings up that interesting point about the author to reviewer relationship when the reviewer has the power dynamic.
Yeah.
So that's very different. Obviously, there's plenty of power dynamics out there where we'd love to have these authors on and like, holy crap. So Tanner, thank you for that submission. Now we have, let's follow that up by the last and best, Chris Ferracchio.
This is the YouTube game. He was probably on the thumbnail. Of course. We try and string you along to watch it all the way through. I don't know what he had to say. So
I did not watch this video either. And I will say, Rocchio's opinion here is basically going to be what the answer to the video title is.
It will be correct.
Let's just see what is the answer to should authors and reviewers be friends? Let's see what he says.
Hey guys, Christopher Rocchio here. And for me, I think the question is less whether or not reviewers and writers can be friends. Certainly we can. And more a question of what that relationship looks like, right? Now, for the writer, I think this doesn't carry a very great penalty. I think it's mostly just to a writer's advantage, to be perfectly honest, to be friends with reviewers for all sorts of reasons I think your audience can figure out. The real onus, I think, falls on the reviewers, right, in order to maintain a reputation for sort of critical integrity, right? And that really comes down to the character of the reviewer in question with regard to how you want to manage that.
He's speaking super fast because I told everybody 1 minute.
Oh,
I decided to try to shoot for a minute. Everybody's went to like 4 minutes, by the way. Rocchio tried to keep it short, so he talks super quick. and he got it in 2 minutes. So just why he's speaking fast. Okay, as he continues.
Think, for example, right, if I were friends with a reviewer and that reviewer were to review one of my books negatively, that review would actually carry more weight because people know that I'm friends with that person and they still didn't like the book. And for my part, I would hope that my friends would respect me enough to tell me that the book was not good if they felt that it wasn't. The real problem, I think, just comes from positive reviews. People will think that that's bought and paid for or obvious in some way. I think the way that reviewers sort of can modulate for that is simply always being honest, right? And I think if you develop a reputation for integrity, have a reputation for integrity preceding any relationship with a writer, you're probably fine. Because the reality is the people who are going to be conspiracy theorists about reviews and about the reception of any particular title are going to be conspiracy theorists and contrarians, period. And one ought not to run one's life or dictate one's own friendships on the basis of what people on the internet with fringe opinions and sort of weird attitudes are going to think. And so perhaps the best thing to do is not worry too much about that feedback in the first place be friends with who you want to be friends with and review books how you think books should be reviewed. And if authors can't respect that, if an author can't respect that, then that's a problem with that author, right? I certainly would hope that you or any of my friends who are reviewers would tell me, like I said, that if the book is bad, would tell me that the book is bad. So that's sort of where I think I come down on that. Thanks for inviting me. Bye.
You know, the thing I caught from that video.
He said, friends! He said, friends! Don't show that to Christopher. No,
don't show that to him.
How fucking lame is that?
It's just
but Christopher, he's such a genuinely great guy as well.
Nah, he's cool.
We were so lucky to talking story, who you guys saw in the first clip when we were at Dragonsteel. So if you guys watch us, you know this. I'm saying for the people that haven't seen this, but we had dinner with Christopher Rocchio, who probably already might have mentioned too, but then he was on the channel and have been friendly with him too. And hey, if he says the word friend, but he's been, it's that other relationship too, where it's very unique from both our point of views, because the order of events is this. We reviewed his first book, Empire of Silence. I didn't like it. You thought it was pretty good.
It's fine. Like, fine, you'd above say? Average, but not...
Sure.
Yeah, I didn't love it.
Put a star rating on it. What would you say?
I couldn't even remember what it was, but I...
We did numbers back then, I think, so...
I think appropriate is like a 3.25, 3.5, like that makes barely.
Sense. I gave it like a 2.25, like very disappointed by it. Like we didn't know Christopher. Then next book, Howling Dark. Don't know Christopher, never talked to him. You gave like...
I read it pretty quickly after because Coop said, hey, look, just trust me, get through the first book, second book on is amazing. I was like, okay, I trust Coop. I trust Coop on this.
Yes.
I read it and went, awesome. Come on. You gotta read book two. And I couldn't stop. I read book three, loved it. One of my favorite books. And at this point, I still never met Christopher before.
And so, you consider Demon White your top five books of all time.
It's in my top five books, period. I love that book. Mm-hmm. I also love Howling Dark. It's so close. And then I stopped and was like, okay, we're going to continue this series together. So I waited just under a year of like, Austin, please read Howling Dark. Austin,
it was
please
8 months. It was 8 months.
It was a long time.
Maybe nine.
And then, and then after that point, did you read Howling Dark first, then met Christopher?
Mm-hmm. So read Howling Dark, floored me, 5 stars. Like my favorite book of, second favorite book of 2024, just because I read Lions of Elrosan that year too. But
that's fair.
Like Howling Dark's in my top, that's in my like
Lions
top.
Lions of Elrosan.
Oh, that, yeah. But Howling Dark like made my top 20 list easy. Love, peak. And so we both read like our favorite book from the series so far, then met Christopher Rocchio. And we're like, oh, he's also great. And so we were thinking with our reviews, how objective can we be? But then since then, I've also loved his books we've read since. So I've read Demon and White, Kingdoms of Death since knowing Christopher Rocchio. Both spectacular books. Howling Dark's still my favorite, but those are both so spectacular books. You read Kingdoms of Death since meeting him. Spectacular book.
Exactly.
Not your favorite, but spectacular book. So
honestly, they're all close.
They're all up there. Yeah.
Yeah.
Except book one.
Except book one.
Yeah.
That's basically it.
And so the interesting relationship with Christopher was having like a pre-knowing Christopher ratings and then post. Like we've had both of those now.
That is true. And I am happy that I read book three before meeting him and going like, hey, look, I was already his mega fan before meeting him. So
how much glaze would that have been otherwise?
Exactly. No, like my opinions have not changed since meeting him. So I don't know. Does that make me honest? I think it buys me some credibility.
It does. Yes, it definitely does. And so Christopher put it obviously very well there in that clip, talking about how you shouldn't listen just to the fringe conspiracy theorists because there'll be conspiracy theorists anyways about it.
Yeah. I mean, again, don't value internet strangers over in-person relationships is the main point, which is true. Because listening to the masses is generally cringe. Some would say listening to the masses is
teeters your totter.
It teeters into something like democracy. And
teeters your totter. Tutorable.com. That's always very. We have merch, by the way. We do have merch.
Yeah, we don't say that very often.
Yes, Tutorable.com.
But
yes.
you can buy things.
Yes, you can. And I got to say on that point too actually remind me of the point. Chris Verrocchio, we're talking.
Conspiracy theorists are going to conspiracy.
Yes. And specifically what Rocky is talking about, too, is I guess part of where that conspiracy theory comes from is the person just doesn't trust the reviewer.
They read a book. Yeah. They think it's just awful. Mm-hmm. And then they watch someone's review and they love it. And then they also find out that they're friends with the author and they go, oh, that's why
they love it, because they can't like this book I don't like.
Yeah.
Or they can't hate on this book that I love. They must have ulterior reasons, like they must want clicks. Mm-hmm. They must dive into the hate, and that's why they're saying they hate the book or whatever.
Yeah.
And so that kind of range of the credibility you have as a reviewer is, does the person viewing you that often happens too. If people have watched your reviews in the past, you'll build more credibility. If it's a bigger book, like our Wind and Truth video that comes out, a ton of people agreed with us, but also plenty disagreed with us. And the comments on a video like that will range from just hating for clicks, or you guys are exactly right, I can't believe this, because they have also seen how much we praise Sanderson in the past.
Well, okay. There were a few comments of going like, oh, you guys are just like saying negative things, you're jumping on the bandwagon. That was very few, like maybe two, three comments like that. Mm-hmm. For the most part, even people that disagree with us are going, they know that we're not like just doing it for clicks. We have so many reviews of like, we love Sanderson. We've been glazing him for years at this point.
Yeah.
We're not just like jumping on the hate bandwagon.
No, you're right. Yeah. No, that was plenty of people, but we had Wind and Truth is now one of our top viewed videos on the channel. Did you know that?
Is it?
It's got like 55,000 views.
Oh, Jesus.
And so the at least on YouTube side, on Pod, it's who knows what those numbers are, and like Spotify and all that. But but that, because of that, I've seen a lot of people who've never seen us before saying the stuff that are just going, like, because they don't know we're Sanderson stans.
Oh yeah. No. They don't understand that we started the podcast, like episode one said, our goal is to meet Sanderson.
Yeah.
we've been on the Sanderson hype train for years.
We put a ship in that armor. I don't know. We were invited to Dragonsteel. The team was so nice to us, and we were not kind to the book.
No. No. No, we were not.
By the way, in hindsight, it's worse than I even thought. Like, you convinced me to lower it even more. I'm at a 1.5 star. I think it's a bad book.
Yeah, both at 1.5.
Yeah, I've just, the more I think of it, the more and more and more it, you know.
Be it. Not
but
good.
But do you trust that? Is it because, you know, maybe Sanderson, because he didn't come on the pod? It's this bitterness.
Is it
bitter?
We gave it a 1.5 because Sanderson has refused to answer our emails and come on the podcast.
We did never ask him. However,
Have we never sent out just like a Hail Mary email?
I probably, maybe like 2 years ago.
Oh, okay.
Maybe I sent something like on Instagram. I can't remember. But
we miss 100% of the shots we don't take.
The thing is, too, we know the circle so well. We could just reach out to Dragonsteel team member.
Oh, no. But if we do know, really, really wanted to, we could insist, but we didn't want to feel like a bother.
Yeah, he's inaccessible enough. Like, we know it would be like, we don't feel like we're providing enough on that side yet. Does that mean it's, that's maybe not the way to put it, because we've had like Abercrombie on and people like that. It's like the connection hasn't sparked where it made sense. Abercrombie, a situation came up of Jed Hearn, buddy of ours has a great writing advice channel. I was like, oh, I just talked to Abercrombie. Want me to connect? Perfect opportunity.
Sure.
You don't want to feel like a parasite of literally all those people that send us emails 30 times a month. No, I actually respect when people do because that's what you should do.
You got to try.
We're doing the bad thing of like weaseling around, just waiting for the opportunity to come. I'll email them, whatever. I don't even know how to email. I'll just email like Grad and Steel. And yeah, we'll just see.
Why not?
I'll post a Wounded Truth review and go like, what do you believe?
Does Sanderson want to watch this and respond to us in an interview? Who knows? I don't think he would. Why should he? But
weekly update. Give a 1 star to this Spotify, Apple podcast, Shoot a Ramble thing.
I'd respect it. I'd respect the hell out of it.
That's who we got to battle. That's the BookTuber. He's technically bring full circle.
He is both the originator and also our arch nemesis.
We both aspire to be him, but also hate him.
Yeah, because he refused to come on our podcast that we never asked him. God.
Well,
by the way, if it is not clear, Sanderson, if you ever get around to this clip,
I don't think you will.
No. We do like you. We think you're a cool guy. We respect the hell out of you. We just didn't like your book. It's fine. It's all okay.
You know how many 5 stars I've given Sanderson books?
I mean, yeah, I know.
We don't have to, like, oh, actually, you moved the
Stormlight. I did move the Stormlight books. I put,
they're right there, though.
They're up there. They're still in the shot. You can see the
Zeth Kaladin.
No, that serious thing. Yeah. Wind and Truth was bad enough for me to go, like, okay, Sanderson doesn't get 2 center shelf spots.
Just one.
He gets one.
Mm-hmm.
And Rocchio now gets center.
And our best friend Rocchio.
Our best friend Rocchio gets center shelf.
And Tolkien. Granddad Tolkien.
Oh, Granddaddy Tolkien is always.
Yeah. Actually, Sanderson does have another middle shelf. Look, he has 3 middle shelves.
He actually does. Oh, well, okay, here's the thing. He just has a lot of merch.
He does.
Other book people don't have a lot of merch.
You're right.
He's the merch king.
People can't see, but the Chol plushies on top.
Does Joe Abercrombie have Glockta figurines? No. No, he doesn't.
Shame.
He should.
Shame. Another body.
another body down the...
Damn.
Ugh. Yeah, I mean, hey, let me know. Let me know down below of the authors that we've reviewed and, like, some of their books that we've talked positively about, which one of them has, like, the most merch that I can, like, buy shit from?
Other than Sanderson.
Yeah, other than Sanderson. Because I'm trying to think...
I think
Pierce Brown has some merch. I think you can buy Red Rising stuff.
Can you? I mean, I've gotten a poster from some Kickstarter.
Yeah, I've seen a figurine.
Oh.
I've seen an action figure of Darrow before.
Oh, thanks for getting it from me.
Yeah, that's fair. I probably would have.
Was there actually an action figure?
Yeah, there's an action figure.
Was it on the Kickstarter?
Maybe.
Actually, I would have looked at it and went like, no, I'm not getting it. Oh, I think I saw that after we bought boatloads of Stormlight figurines. And I went, I don't know what to do with all these.
It's a weird choice for the action figure. It's the action figure of like the Helldiver costume of Darrow. And it's like, cool, but I kind of would have wanted like...
Other scenes Darrow.
Darrow of Mars. Like, I kind of would have wanted...
He's always of Lycos.
Yeah, that we got Darrow of Lycos in that figurine. I wouldn't want Darrow of Mars.
We're actually thinking of it. We could start doing merch for these authors. Get a little website together. Rambler rating website's in the works. It's a rating website. It's happening. Rich, any sign off for should authors and reviewers be friends?
It's inevitable, but reviewers get to choose which reviewers they listen to. If they don't like it...
Viewers get to, yes.
Yeah, viewers, they get to choose if they like the relationships or not. So if you don't like us and you don't like our friendships, you can click off.
You've been here for well over an hour. So what does that say about you? Who do you trust? That is true. Where are you putting your responsibilities? Just think over things. All right. Thanks for watching. Bye, everybody.
Bye, y'all.
Why is life better with American Family Insurance? Because every policy comes with something very special. a trusted agent who's there to help protect your dreams by finding the right coverage at the right price. Save up to 23% when you bundle home and auto. American Family Insurance. Get a quote and find an agent at AmFam.com.
Products not available in every state. Visit AmFam.com to learn how discounts may apply to you. American Family Mutual Insurance Company, S.I. and its operating company, 6000 American Parkway, Madison, Wisconsin.